I was just trying to say to Dave, I was trying to look up that joke, you know, the one about taking offence? No, you don't know that joke, do you? No. I was trying to look it up on Google yesterday, but that was Googling offensive jokes. This is what we want to do, if you could put the first one up, is go through a part of this series on being spiritually intelligent. So Carol and Marion last time were looking at depression and approaching that from a Christian viewpoint. And today we're going to be looking at the subject of anger, and approaching that as a spiritually intelligent person. And it's a bit of a tricky one, because it's all about emotions, isn't it? And anger isn't a sort of simple emotion like happy, sad. It is very complex. It's a muddle of disappointment, frustration, hurt. Sometimes it seems to trigger memories of some situation way back in time that then... you're then angry about the current petty situation because of something in the pot. It's complex and complicated. So it's quite a tricky one. I'll try and not get too emotional today, but yeah. And hopefully for you as well, it will be a chance to reflect on some of the theory about anger and looking at it from a Christian perspective, but also a challenge as well to think if there's anything you want to change yourself about how you view anger. And I'm very much talking about in ourselves, you know, dealing with ourselves, not talking about how to deal with angry people sort of thing. No, that's for somebody else to help you with, I think. I'd just run away, yeah. So it is very much, you know, what can we deal with ourselves? How can we understand ourselves? Sometimes, of course, that might be anger at ourselves. It might be anger at God. It might be anger at others. Okay, so let's look at how we can deal with it in a really constructive way. So the next one is a useful quote. Human anger is designed by God to motivate us to take constructive action. And I've, over the last few years, read this book quite a bit by Gary Chapman, all about dealing with anger. And you might recognise the name of the author. He's a Christian who does lots of counselling, and he did the book about the loves, like five loves and things. So he's written about anger in a very sort of theoretical way, but also in a Christian context as well. And he makes the point that it is an emotion. It is neutral. It's not bad or good. It's what you do with it that's an issue. And also, it's designed by God. It's part of God. There's lots of descriptions in the Bible of God being angry. And therefore, it's okay to be angry. You can have justified anger. Of course, there will be times when you don't see the full picture, you don't really know the truth of a situation, and maybe your anger is not justified, and maybe that's a problem. Also, it can be used as a really good indication of morality. If you're angry about something that is really wrong, then actually that's showing that you care, and it's showing that you're viewing a wrong thing as this is an injustice, and I care about it. You know, that's quite a good thing, really, to be angry about unjust things that happen to us, to other people. And C.S. Lewis used it as a proof of there being a good God as well. So an angry God that's angry about things that matter, about people being hurt, and actually that is then shown up in lots of people, because people will say, well, that's not right. You know, why? And almost universally across the world in different societies, there are kind of a basic sort of moral code as well of people saying, that's not right. And we have, you know, ways of doing things kind of universally across the world. And I guess now that's been sort of spelt out a bit, even if you don't agree with all of it, in the Human Rights Act and everything like that, which, yes, it definitely has its objectors. But there do seem to be some universal wrongs and rights that are taken. And you can then argue on to say, well, that's then proof that, you know, God has designed this, that there is a good moral force in the universe as well. So trying to look at it in the sort of day-to-day, there's a sort of a theory that you can kind of approach. I'm going to do a little diagram, learning about flowcharts this week and decision trees. Let me see if I can get this right. So we've got any event happens to you, anything. The example from Gary Chapman is you're mowing the lawn and zhunk, you've then mowed through the kid's toy that got left in the lawn, but you told them not to leave the stuff in your lawn. You told them to clear out the lawn, but you've mowed through their sand bucket. You feel anger. Well, okay, is that justified? Is that right? Is it wrong? Is it okay to be angry about that? So here's a sort of Sue's saying yes, but so this is just a theoretical event. The idea is you could apply this way of thinking to anything. Okay, so this is to work out if you're justifiably angry. So I think this is worth knowing. Okay, so some event happens, like bashing into a kid's sand bucket. You then ask the question: is it right? So this is the sort of moral bit. Is that right or wrong? And then if you might come through and go, no, go, yeah, it's fine, no problem. Or you might come through and go, sorry, I got this wrong. Is it right? Yes, it's fine, no problem. No? Well, the next bit of the moral sort of complex is then, do I care? The love side of it, yeah? So if you care about it, then it's yes this way. If you don't care, it's no that way. So if you don't care, okay, not angry. If you do care about the thing, yes, then this is where, get out red pen, you are then angry. Okay? And so this way of looking at things is saying, is the event right or wrong? And then, do I care about it? What's the love in the situation? And we think that that's the way that God is approaching things. Examples in the Bible of him sending Jesus to save us. And that's is it right that people are doing bad things, sin and all that? No. Does God care about it? Yes. Angry about it? Angry enough to do something? Yes. And he sent Jesus to save us. That's like a big event. But then, the small lawnmower event is it right? No. Those buckets should have been cleared up. Do I care? Yes. That's the problem. Are you angry? Yes. So then are you justifiably angry? And so there might be a conversation to have with the children about, did they check this buckets on the lawn? And so it's, of course, in some situations, you can think you're seeing something. You can sort of think that you're seeing what's really happening. And actually, you don't know the full picture. You don't know, why that bucket's been left on the lawn or whatever. In more serious circumstances, you actually have to go back and ask questions and find out if what you're seeing is really, really did take place, because it's all about our perceptions. So you might sometimes perceive something to be wrong, and actually it's not. You haven't got the full picture, you don't understand people's motivations or whatever. So it's nice and simple, but that's a sort of simple way of throwing something at a situation. Say, is it right? And you can go back and ask questions of people if it's not obvious. And then, do you care about it? The love side of it as well. So there'll be some things that you just don't care about and it's fine. And then other things that you do, and then you've got that emotion of anger. But what are you going to do with it?
Are you distinguishing between anger and rage at this point? I think in a lot of people,
go on.
They seem to be the same thing.
So I'm talking about anger being the feeling of being insulted or injured. So it's how you perceive that you've been insulted or injured. And that might be justifiably so. You might have been. Or it might not be justifiable. You might just be, like I said, about taking offence. Sometimes I definitely go through times of taking offence at the smallest comment or whatever. It's the person or your or my perception. And then, of course, that then can just be brushed off and it doesn't go to anger, but at other times it does go to anger. And I think rage would then be another step on of actually then showing that anger to others, I think. But I haven't got a definitive answer on that. That's my thought. So thinking about God and how he behaves in a way of being good and holy and at the same time knowing all the truth and being loving is, I think, a useful way of thinking about God's anger. And of course, we'd like to be like that. But there's sort of examples of that in the Bible, of the way that God God behaves, but I've picked up one from Jesus' life. If you could put that, yeah. So for this one, Jesus kept being challenged time and time again about the Sabbath laws. And so the Pharisees have this thing about you've got to only do permitted things on the Sunday day, on the Sabbath day. And they're just always trying to pick up Jesus on this thing. And it gets to the point where here in this synagogue, there's somebody there who's healed. Jesus has the power. There's somebody there, sorry, who's hurt, whose hand is withered away. And Jesus, of course, has the power to heal the person. And they're just, they're sort of teasing Jesus. Are you going to do it? Are you going to heal him? But it's the Sabbath. You shouldn't do it, kind of thing. So it's a bad situation where they're pushing Jesus. And then we can see how he reacts. So it says, a man was there with a withered hand, and they watched Jesus to see whether he would heal him on the Sabbath, so they might accuse him. And he said to the man with the withered hand, come here. And he said to them, is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or do harm, to save life or to kill? But they were silent. And this is all from Mark 3. And then the next bit. Jesus looked at them with anger, grieved at their hardness of heart, and said to the man, stretch out your hand. He stretched it out and his hand was restored. So there's an example there of Jesus feeling anger at the injustice, at the way that they were, I guess basically like goading Jesus to act. But Jesus knew that the right thing to do would be to heal this person. It doesn't matter what day of the week it is. And he did it. So it's another good example of how it's okay to feel anger. It's then what you do.
Can I ask another question that probably
Richard, yeah.
If you saw this happening, how would you know Jesus was angry in that state?
I don't know. I'm taking this as...
Picture it in my head.
The answer.
Thinking, he says, stretch out your hand. How do you know he's angry when he says that?
Well, he looked around at them with anger, so I think we probably tell in his face.
Yeah.
Where the anger's going, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Perhaps
using his teacher glare.
Yes. I think it could be the teacher glare, yes. Because he's asked them the open-ended question, hasn't he? Like the bit before, he asked them that question. Is it okay? Is it lawful? Is it right to do good or harm? Is it right? And then they haven't answered, so he answers with doing good. And I think anger can be used like that, and that's a kind of like good anger, in that Jesus there has noticed the anger and he's done a really good thing. And for us, it really helps us as well, because if you recognise you're feeling that anger and act on it, then it can actually like pull you out of a situation. So my example is the situation of doing the washing up and being, here I am doing the washing up. Chunter, 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 groan, groan, groan. Why am I doing the washing up? This isn't justified, kind of thing. So that kind of grumpy kind of situation, going on and on and on in my head, a sort of silly, silent argument. It's like, what am I doing? Actually, this is stupid. And so you can just continue in a cycle of self-pity and going round and round in circles. But if it then flicks into anger, and you begin to feel some passion about this washing up and the injustice of doing the washing up, or, whatever it might be, then actually that feeling, that intensity of emotion about, if you can take a step back and realise that this is just funny and it's just, it's in the big picture, doing the washing up is not really a big deal, it's fine. If you can take that, then you can use the anger to good. You can use it to say, well, think what actions you might need to do. So in that example, well, maybe it's something like talk to Andrew about doing the washing up, or step away before I start throwing plates, because because I laugh, but no, plates have been thrown, and it is just a case of, and it is silly, because if you can actually step back and think, if I don't stop doing this, I will be throwing plates, then that's just silly, because then you're going through into a sort of behaviour pattern Richard earlier mentioned the word rage, of having a pattern of behaving really badly and childishly, really. So you can use that anger to notice it and to choose how you're going to behave. And sometimes it is a case of, yep, you need to step away from that situation or work out a plan of you know, talking to somebody about the help in that situation, or whatever it is. So it can be really, really good. And for thinking about the home sort of situation like that, there's been a couple of people, one friend at work, and then another one completely separately, who a year, 18 months ago, was saying to me about this website that they use, and they've signed up for emails all the time. And this is really fab, because every day now I get this email from Fly Lady, who's American, so it is very American. But it's really encouraging, because I then realise I am not alone. There are plenty of people managing houses who feel like a martyr and like washing up. But the way she puts things is kind of like a bit of a sort of wake up of, yeah, you do feel like that, but so what? Move on. Set in place routines, do these sensible things, and ask people for help, delegate. And so she's got really, basically, it's like an encouraging email every day, which sounds a tad naff, but, you know, got to let you know, for that situation, rather than getting into a pattern of like bad behaviour, of anger, listening to these friends who'd had a similar sort of feeling of what Fly Lady calls chaos, can't have anyone over syndrome, which is, yeah, chaos, fantastic. So basically your house is so cluttered because you've given up doing the washing up, you've given up clearing, you've given up giving the clothes to the charity shop and clearing out things, because you're in a sort of downward spiral. So it's kind of moving from a sort of downward spiral, noticing that, and sometimes anger can be the trigger that... Or that, rather than a sort of coming from a desperation thing, coming from an anger situation, can actually be the trigger to then think, actually, for me, it was like, oh, I need to look at this website that these friends are talking about. What is it? What does it mean? And it was really helpful, because it was telling you stuff about psychology and encouragement and practical help and things, and I guess the day by day reminder as well. So it doesn't mean I don't ever get angry about household things, but I think it does help to just get some things done as well, which then, of course, feeds into a positive upward cycle of getting things done and feeling better about sort of some of the home stuff. So that kind of petty sort of anger, I think it's really important that I've looked at that and dealt with some of that, because really I want to be angry about important things, about injustices in the world. What can I do to change the world, to make it better? You know, those kind of things. Whereas if my thought patterns are so busy being filled with little things that I'm angry with or frustrated with, then where's the space for having compassion for people in poverty around the world, or just the, you know, having time to talk to friends locally and be a friendly person and all sorts of good things that, you know, God would want me to do. And I think I've noticed that as that kind of thing at work as well, that at work it's very difficult to sort of let those anger emotions out, and so they all get squashed. And this is a question that I'd like you guys to have a look at, so have a think about some of the issues in a workplace. So I've sort of chatted a bit about the home side, but I think it's the same sort of things. You know, you get asked to do things at work, and is it okay, and all that. Same sort of things come up workplace. Of course, if you're not working, then it's fine to think about the home place, home as well, and when you're out and about. But can we look at these questions, please? So this is over to you, and then we'll feed feedback if you're happy to. A few minutes on what are some of the issues that anger people the most in a job. So you can, of course, take your own personal thing, or just in general, people in a job. And then why do you think people store their anger while at work? So most workplaces, I guess, aren't too, like, shouting and screaming. I think there's quite a lot of professionalism in, certainly in my workplace. You don't hear too many slammed doors and things, which you might hear more at home, I think. So why does that happen? Why is there this contrast between work and home? So over to you. Okay, so please feed back your ideas if you're happy to. Have you come up with any issues? Top three? Pardon, Andy?
People not living up to responsibilities. Not doing things when they're being asked to do things.
So at work for you, it's people not doing
what they're asked.
Okay. Not doing the job. Can I put that? Not doing
their job.
Their job. Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
You've been. Sounds like Andy's been let down. Any other issues at work?
Minute scrutiny of every thing.
So.
You know, why this way? What is that mean? What does that mean? No, get on and do the job. I've done it for you.
So deep, too much detail, sort of thing.
Well, it's the scrutiny.
Micromanagement.
Okay. That's a good word, isn't it? Micro. Manage. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Not allowed to be a professional. Having a professional judgment. So, been teaching for 20 years, and often it comes from government rather than my head. But yeah. People telling you how to do your job, you know, like you've been teaching 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Not being trusting that you could get a 4-year-old to read and write.
Yeah. Okay.
Precise.
No. Well. Not being trusted, we put that down.
Do your job.
Top-down decisions without consultation.
Yeah, yeah. We could. It sounds like I've run out of space now. We could just go on and on and on. There's lots of things, aren't there?
There's also a big corollary to that. People at the top not making a decision.
Oh, that's even worse, actually.
Okay. So not micromanagement, but bad management.
Different people finding out differences in pay and being overlooked for promotion.
Right, yeah. That's always at the top of the union list, actually. So I'll put that up here. Hey.
Taking advantage.
Yeah, people abusing the system.
Yeah. We could go on and on, couldn't we? So, in the workplace, it's challenging. There are issues that are going to challenge you and are going to challenge other people. But why? What about this? Did you get onto the why people store up their anger? Because obviously there are going to be times when there's picket lines and anger is displayed and people have arguments or whatever. But there's other times when people store it up.
Code of conduct.
Yes, it's code of conduct, so you can't just like make it.
People would be fearful as well of reconnaissance.
Well, but at the end of the day, I've got bills to pay, and the way I pay bills is to go out and do a job. And if I fly off the handle at the slightest thing, I'm going to be put through disciplinary, and eventually I'm going to lose my job, and how am I going to pay my bills? How am I going to feed the kids? You know, that's how are we going to feed the kids?
That's an element of
saying I
do. I'm going to feed Sarah.
There's a difference in feeling angry or being angry about something, and our common expression of that, which is either aggression or violence. Now, back to the passage, Jesus was angry about the thing, but he was certainly neither aggressive nor violent. But if we can get our anger across in a way that is not aggressive nor violent, then we would have more opportunity to express our anger about something that would be more positive to the workplace, and then not ending up in being sacked or charged or whatever else that goes with aggression and violence and unacceptable behaviour at work.
Yeah. But all of that, in I guess in Sue's case, that's really hard to think about. How am I going to do that? So just zip it all up.
At one point, yes.
There was an incident. He went round, looked around, then the next day he went back and turned around.
Oh, you think the example, the example of Jesus in the temple. Yeah. So that's demonstrably violent.
But he went to code of conduct.
I found a loophole.
Whips and tails.
Yeah, I guess that would be it.
Something that I think about storing anger is also personality.
Okay.
So I had a production manager who came up through the shop door, and when something went wrong, he let everyone know about it. And he was very effective as a production manager, but that was just his way of dealing with it, whereas I tend to be... might be turned and go away and pick up.
So it does depend, doesn't it? You can have people who behave in a way using their anger constructively, like Nigel was saying about or just like, sorry, spooky on your tooth, just say, just, I've got the bills to pay, just suck it up, it's fine, kind of thing. So yeah, it's difficult, and the personality comes into that as well. So the example from Gary Chapman is basically saying, you've got to deal with it. Don't just store it up. It's not good because it's going to come out somewhere, at home or in the workplace, when that last straw happens or whatever. So yeah, it's finding out that way of choosing how to act, but taking the appropriate choice of what to do about it. And sometimes for us as Christians, it might from the outside look like just sucking it up. But actually inside, if you're processing that and taking it to God and praying and, Gary Chapman's phrase is, release the person to God, kind of like forgiveness, really. So if you can do that, then that is still an action, and that is might not be seen from the outside at all, but it is an action that I'd suggest is good for us to do as Christians. Okay, Dave. Coming back to the situation of, for me, of looking at the kids. I found this psychologist's viewpoint on looking at the kids and, you know, when they're in a tantrum or when they're behaving in a crazy way that makes you think irrationally and get into that kind of angry state. He was advising this way of looking at what the kids are doing and actually having this attitude of being playful, having acceptance of whatever the kids have done, but it doesn't mean it's okay what they've done. There's still some discipline in there as well. But accepting their emotions, accepting that they're having a tantrum, might not be okay to have the tantrum right now, but you know, you can still accept it. Not actually telling them off if this is where the kids are feeling angry or they're feeling so grumpy that they're behaving badly. So having acceptance for them. And then also being curious and having curiosity and asking them, you seem to be angry, but why are you angry? And asking these kind of questions of the children to get them to kind of understand their emotions as well. And then also having empathy as well and understanding that their day can be a crazy kind of day and being ready to do that. The interesting thing with the psychologist who put this together was he had started by using the acronym PLACE instead, with the word love for love, and then he twigs that actually all these actions are like loving actions, so he just cut that the lut out and he's got PACE, so it's kind of like pace yourself with the children. So this is a useful sort of tool I found to sort of think about how the kids are behaving. And the challenging thing, of course, is in the midst of feeling angry is to think of those things. Whether all this applies to the workplace, I have yet to work that one out. But I think, it's a way of approaching people and thinking about other people. And we've obviously got those tools of prayer and understanding the psychology of people, and we can use all those things, but also support from other people and self-care, like looking after ourselves. Because if we're tired and worn out and stressed, then it's going to be difficult to think carefully about how to react in a situation where inside you feel really angry. Could you flick on? And then this idea of how are we behaving? Does it give glory to God or does it give glory to ourselves? And so for quite a lot of the time when I was feeling a bit out of control in dealing with the kids and getting too angry with them, I was feeling kind of fearful and a bit like, oh no, I'm going to be like Cain who murdered his brother. I'm going to be like Moses who got really crazy and murdered that Egyptian guy. And then later on God said to him, you've got to show me the glory, not take it all for yourself. And, you know, he got really angry with the Israelites and there was a miracle where he bashed a rock and water came out. Instead of saying, God has provided, glory to God, he took it all on himself. Look what I've done. I've sorted things out. Why were you moaning? Sort of thing. So I was sort of taking in these people. And then whereas Joshua, on the other hand, seemed to get it right a lot of the time and give glory to God. David... I've switched those the wrong way around. I'd say if it's like thinking of it as like David being the good example, then David, as the king David, was had loads of times when Saul, to him, You could have said he was abusing him, he was chasing after him, fighting him, winding him up, basically. And somehow David is never shown as getting angry with Saul, and he had chances when he could have, like, captured Saul or taken him prisoner or worse or whatever, and he didn't. He just stepped away. And yet Saul, the way he behaved, was, like, really angry and really irrational and getting mad. And so I was looking at these examples and the Jesus Peter example as well, and feeling like, I'm like the really bad one. I'm the one who's behaving badly and crazy and irrationally. Whereas somehow there are all these examples in the Bible of people who, although given, you know, similar challenges and problems in life, behave in a different way and seem to be able to control their anger. So it was realizing that actually, I'm actually working through this feeling scared and fearful. I don't want to be like this. And so that's when I then signed up for a course with the Children's Centre to learn about parenting and find out some help and support. And that's been really, really useful. And it's... Okay, so it started out being really fearful, and that made me then want to change. But I hopefully not stayed fearful. Hopefully I've moved to be more full of faith about that I can change, and I can be kind, and I can not control my anger, but I can try and make these choices most of the time, I think, if we'll put it like that, actually. And can we go on to this next bit? As well, this Bible passage about love, it describes love, and I'm thinking, I want to be like this. And then sort of beating myself up about, oh, I'm not like this, I'm not full of love, oh no, kind of thing. So I've almost had the sort of wrong thinking of, if I'm not behaving like this, then I need to just shut up and squash my anger and, like, keep it all in. And actually, I eventually realised that this is like a stronghold for me, and I had to deal with that and go through all that thinking that I've talked about anger is okay. It is okay to feel angry. You don't need to squash it. You can actually make decisions and choices about what you do. And some of it can be internal. People never see it. Some things are going to be external. You're going to ask people to help you or do things to help you out. And for me, in the situation with the kids, then it often would be like asking Andy to do the bath time, because bath time was a difficult one. So I've got the duck. It became like sort of really fearful having bath time with the kids, just because they, at the end of the day, they played it, and I can look at it now and just laugh. But at the time, it was like, Andrew, you have to do bath time, kind of thing, because it is just so difficult, I'm going to get angry, kind of thing. And it just seems really strange that was where I was, but I was. And I think so part of that was working out about the strongholds and dealing with what the truth is. And there's this idea, people sort of say simply, that you get your beliefs sorted, they're like the engine of the train, then the carriages that follow are the emotions and behaviour. It's a bit too simplistic, really. But there's something in it. I think the beliefs at the front being the engine, and then the emotions and your behaviour will follow. So that there's something in that about the stronghold is about thinking about it. What do I believe? Making sure you believe the right stuff. In my situation, believing about, what do I believe about anger? Is it okay to feel angry? And also some of the stuff about just not getting stressed and all the sort of useful practical things about taking some care of myself to make sure I'm not too tired out to get on and do what needs to be done. So that idea is a bit too simplistic. It's more of a, there are different times when you're going to be wanting to look at either beliefs or look at your emotions and if you are overreacting a lot. And there'll be other times when you just need to look at your behaviour and get some really good sort of routines or habits or help about changing your behaviour. I think the thing that's worth doing is looking at those and evaluating where you are. And anger can just be that trigger point to just help you work out, oh, there's something I need to sort out, really. And then when you're all calm, of course, then you can try and think about it and work out what does need changing at the time. Because, it seems to change over time, really. And then my last plug for anger's okay is that it's there in Paul's letters as well. In Ephesians, he talks a lot about behaviour, and one of them is, he said, one of the points he makes, pretty well known, in your anger, do not sin. And also about get on and deal with it. Do not let the sun go down while you're still angry. Do not give the devil a foothold. So it's about, if there's stuff that needs dealing with, if maybe there's someone you need to talk to actually say that they've wronged you, maybe not, maybe you just need to talk to God and say, God, I do forgive that person, it's all right. But, you know, you've got to make a decision, you've got to choose about some things, or else you're just hanging on to that anger, and it seems that that's not healthy for us. And then we're a bit short on time, but I'll just throw that one up briefly. That was Gary Chapman from his book as well, like, How to Deal with Anger. So I recommend the book for, like, the steps through. He's very sort of mechanistic in looking at these things, but it does help to try and think about the theory of it all. And then, last bit. This is one I remember from the marriage course, expressing anger. Typically, we tend, this is again, big generalisation, but tend to behave a bit like a hedgehog, as in, like, you implode, you don't implode or explode, you don't show your anger, you just hide away. And I think I'd probably be on that side. And then people tend to be a rhino. And I thought this could also be a bit like Vulcans and Romulans in Star Trek. Like, you know, some people sort of hide their emotions and pretend they don't have any emotions. And others are a bit more expressive and you know that they're angry. Kind of, you know, the typical angry customer in the restaurant with you and you, yeah, and you're cringing there going, I don't want to be here, kind of thing. I wouldn't ever complain, you know, that sort of thing. But again, that's really simplistic, that viewpoint, because I think at different times in different places, like I was saying about the workplace versus home, I think we behave a bit like rhinos and hedgehogs in different places as well, depending on how we think we should behave as well. So I think my point there is, if you are a bit more like a hedgehog, just make sure you're not really hiding your anger too much, because actually there might be stuff you need to deal with. And also you might, well, like I was wasting my time just thinking grumbly, moany thoughts. And of course, another really obvious point is a lot of this just comes from what you've learned. So, like, how do you behave in the workplace? Well, it's probably what your colleagues behave a bit like, isn't it, really? Or at home, you might be behaving a bit like your mum and dad used to behave at home. And you just sort of pick up that that's okay to sort of shout and scream, or that's okay to hide it and be grumpy and have the sulks. So it is well worth sort of thinking about how you normally behave and also how you'd like to behave. And then my next one is the times when I am a rhino might be when I'm driving the car, because there's difficult days at work and I, of course, push it all down at work. And then travelling home, I don't want to be driving too fast. I need to be all calm. And so thinking back, there have been times when, you know, coming back from places, I said, no, Andrew, you need to drive. I'm too cross, kind of thing. And that's okay as well to admit to people that, you know, you can't be in this situation. You need to, you know, you need to stop. And it's a safety thing as well, isn't it, about that, to actually be calm. And for you, there'll be lots of different ways that you calm down. And for some people, if you sort it out, fantastic, that's great. Share and notice people who are not dealing with it. And, well, no, that was another. I said I wouldn't talk about that, did I? Yeah, so don't go around helping angry people unless they ask for help. Which brings me on to my next thing, which a while back I was feeling a bit like this, and I drew a picture to try and explain. So this kind of Lemonji shape is stress over a typical day. So you might wake up fine, and then just stuff happens over the day, and then you might calm down in the evening. So if you hit me at that point, oh dear, ooh, very stressed, yeah? So it's like just the obvious way, if that's how a day can be, and understanding that, like, for you, if you're dealing with other people, they've got their own stress pattern as well over their day. They've dealt with things, and it's really, it's going to be a challenge when two people then have a problem that needs sorting. So that's about empathy and about understanding each other's sort of stressful lives, really. And I felt I sort of moved from those kind of things then on to the next one. And some of that was from really helpful words of encouragement and prayers from some of you guys, so thank you for that. Because there were times when, you know, I was reminded just to keep my feet on the ground, just to breathe, moving from anger to laughter, and pictures of freedom as well. So that was really helpful over that time, because each of those times I could then just ignore them, or hopefully, because I've remembered them, I think they were times when I then chose to do something, like go on that course I said about, or read that book, or think about what I needed to change at home. So we've whizzed through looking at anger today, and next time round, when we pick up this course, this series again of spiritual intelligence, will be looking at forgiveness, and Andy Weeds will talk about that, because that's something that fits in with this. It's going to come out of anger or other situations as well. And hopefully God's spoken to you today from some of the stories. But of course, if any prayers or talking about it would help, do ask, and as others here, because we're all able to help each other on these kind of issues. Thank you. We'll finish there.